Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting today live from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. We're starting out our Wednesday, as we do every week, with the Dakota Political Junkies. Seth Tupper is a reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Denise Ross is an editor with the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Together, they make up our panel of junkies for the week. The Dakota Political Junkies, in case you didn't know, are a team of some of the most insightful and experienced political journalists in the state. We're glad to have them here. Seth Tupper, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me.
Denise Ross, welcome as well.
It's good to be with you.
I think we better start with the convention and South Dakota making a little bit of national news, at least via video, with a faceplant of protest. Denise, do you want to fill us in on that story?
Well, you know, I actually saw it on the national, one of the cable news channels before. I saw the statewide reporting on it, but it was a delegate by the name of Isaac Latterell, and I think he's in the legislature, if I'm not mistaken. But when the votes came in to put Trump over the top and officially mint him as the Republican nominee for 2016, if people haven't seen the video, he just puts his face right in his palm and as a sign of disappointment, I guess, and disbelief. And he later told other reporters that it was a sign of protest and that he doesn't agree and doesn't think Trump is the best nominee for his party and doesn't believe he can win in the fall. And so that opens up a whole debate, as we all have been following, about the state of the Republican Party and the splintering and fracturing of people who want to get behind Donald Trump as a nominee and hope to defeat Hillary Clinton in November versus people who just don't believe that he's the best standard bearer for the GOP right now.
Denise, are you hearing anything in response to that action? Are people in South Dakota responding to how that makes us look? Do they feel it's a positive or does it detract?
No, I haven't. It just happened, you know, yesterday. and I haven't had a lot of extensive discussions about it. But I will share a moment yesterday that really surprised me, not related to the faceplant per se, but it was, took my kids to a summer movie. The Discount Theater here had a 25-year-old version of The Little Rascals was playing. And Donald Trump made a 5-second cameo in the middle of the movie as a father of one of these obnoxious kid in the movie. And I kind of laughed, thinking, well, that's timely, right? And the theater, the rest of the grown-ups in the theater gave a collective kind of disgusted, ugh. And that really surprised me. I mean, I thought there might be a mix of that and some cheering or something, but it was a really visceral response to that. And that was as much of an insight as anything else as you're going to get. I mean, that's a pretty good cross-section of people, albeit people with young children, which might be a subgroup of the electorate that's especially upset with some of the things that Donald Trump has been saying publicly.
Seth, have you heard anybody talking about this and having a response to a Latterell's facepalm?
Well, only, you know, not too much commentary, only that, you know, a lot of people are taking notice of it and viewing it as a, you know, a kind of a symbol of the Republican Party as a whole right now. And it is kind of a perfect symbol of the way that some of the longer term, more moderate mainstream members of the party are watching this convention play out. And they're kind of in disbelief that, you know, this moment that they didn't think would happen. The nomination of Donald Trump is happening. And I think for a lot of those people, it's kind of surreal. Mm. And that moment of, you know, putting your head in your palm and shaking your head like this is, it's happening. That's kind of a, like I said, just a great symbol for the way some Republicans, not all, obviously, but some of them are feeling right now.
And let's talk about the Republican platform. Are either of you hearing anything come out of that platform that is particularly pertinent to South Dakota? Seth, you want to chime in on that first?
Well, in a word, no. I haven't heard anything about the platform. You know, I have looked at the state platforms, which are, you know, for the state parties, which are more of interest to me necessarily than the national party. But no, I haven't heard a lot of talk about that. And, you know, part of that is, you know, Donald Trump obviously soaks up all the attention and, you know, and the spotlight and is going to, you know, kind of get all the attention of the convention. I think is, you know, people are even less interested in the platforms this year, I think, probably than they usually are because, you know, Donald Trump is sort of the rock star of the week.
Denise, I printed out the platform this morning. I'm working my way through it. I'm on agriculture. I'd like to know some of the, you know, different platform thoughts and philosophies on. I've never read a party platform before in my life, so I'll read both of them this year and sort of see what I can learn. Have you heard anything, Denise, about the national platform?
Well, I'm a little bit chagrined to say no, and that I've never read a national party platform either.
I'll let you know. I'll give you the spark notes.
But you're right that those things do kind of matter. They percolate up, although, as we all know, and especially when it comes to social issues, but other issues too, those platforms are driven by very passionate, very engaged people, often polarized to one side of the political spectrum or the other. And they don't often translate directly into policy. It's just sort of a chance for those groups to voice their opinions and get it down in writing, and it makes some people feel better. Whether or not that actually translates into policy, that's a long road for that to go. However, it is a starting point, and it is reflective of the party, and that's something that those folks do point back to. Our platform says this, and if we believe this, and we have to advance it in policy. So they do play a role. It's just so hard to say that that's going to have any direct bearing on any laws that get passed by Congress, for example.
Sure.
You know, one thing I'd add is that just occurred to me is one thing we probably can say is that Donald Trump doesn't really care what's in the platform.
Right.
he's his own man. He's going to say what he thinks. He's going to take his own positions. And there's probably never been a presidential nominee in history who was less concerned about what was in his party's platform than Donald Trump.
Interesting. Senator Thune is not at the convention. Mike Rounds was on stage at one point. Someone said they saw him up there. I'm not sure in what context. Any conversation or thoughts about that, of who's there from South Dakota and who's not?
Well, yeah, to me it's really interesting that John Thune's not there. Of course, if you look at history, at the last Republican convention, he had a primetime speech that was televised, and he's the third-ranking Republican member of the Senate. He's a national leader in the party, and he's always, you know, throughout the primary process, said nice things about Donald Trump and has said he'll vote for him and that the party needs to now unify behind him. So then all of a sudden, the fact that he decides to be, I think he was in Eagle Butte this week, he's in Pierre this week, that he decides to be those places instead of the Republican National Convention is very, very interesting. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but, you know, as they say, actions speak louder than words. And it's one thing to hear him say he supports Donald Trump, but then for him not to be at the convention as so many people would expect him to be, maybe we should be reading something into that.
I was watching last night. There were a whole lot of empty chairs during prime time, so I don't think he was the only one who wasn't there. Maybe that's typical of a convention, but the commentators didn't seem to think so. They thought that was sort of a new thing. Denise, did you watch any of the convention this week?
You know,
are you giving yourself a break from that?
No, I tend to kind of dip in and out. It's hard to sit and just watch some of it, you know, for endlessly, for me anyway. But I did notice that after the kids were in bed and I turned it on thinking that I was going to see the big speech of the night. It wasn't. It was some soap opera actress that was on. And the commentators were saying they had all the big speeches earlier in the night, and the scheduling of the speeches was out of order as far as they could tell, and things were weird, like the scheduling was off. And they were talking about the ability to actually run a convention by the Donald Trump campaign to organize and set things up in a way that made sense. Which to me, the one thing that people all say about Donald Trump is that he's got this great sense of show business and style and how to put on a show and entertain. And so the fact that the speeches don't seem to be in the right time slots, according to tradition anyway, is a little bit odd. That you wouldn't turn it on at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and see something really, you know, the whole place going wild. That's
sure.
What you would expect. We'll see what happens tonight. You know, the first night, of course, we haven't even talked about Melania Trump's speech and the plagiarism allegations. And if you see the tape with Michelle Obama in 2008 and Melania Trump now, you know, it's pretty hard to say that that wasn't just lifted and copied and repeated.
I think this morning as I walked into the studio, they had it on one of the news channels that the speechwriter has apologized for it, and they have an accountability person now who's come out and said, this is what I did, and she tendered her resignation, and it was declined. They decided to keep her. And I think it was a her. I don't know. It could have been a male speechwriter. But I was sort of seeing that out of the corner of my eye as I came in. That's still developing. Yeah. Seth, let's talk about... Oh, go ahead.
No, go. You go ahead.
Seth, let's talk about Paula Hawkes and Christy Noem. You've got some work coming out in the Rapid City Journal soon. Tell us what you can about what to tune in for.
Yeah, Paula Hawkes is out here this week doing a few town halls and campaigning. And so I was able to talk with her yesterday, and I'll have a story if all goes according to plan in the paper tomorrow. And one of the things it's going to focus on that was surprising to me is that it appears that Paula Hawkes, the Democrat challenger, is going to try to take a perceived strength of Christy Noem's, which is agriculture, and kind of use it as a weakness. And one of the things she's that Paula Hawkes has been saying at her town halls, and what she said to me, is she's been focusing on the fact that Christy Noem isn't on the agricultural committee anymore in the House. She's on Ways and Means instead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that we've lost quite a few CRP, Conservation Reserve Program acres in South Dakota, you know, Paula Hawkes is trying to make the case that Christy Noem hasn't been a strong enough advocate for that and for country of origin labeling. And she's got quite a few issues that she brings up. And so I found that to be somewhat of a novel approach, because Christy Noem comes from a farming background, and that's always been something that has helped her win elections. So to see a Democrat try to turn that around and use it against her is an interesting approach, and you know, could make at least for some interesting campaigning.
Paula Hawkes has an agricultural background as well, doesn't she?
She
don't
does.
They both?
Yeah,
they both
she does,
do. Yeah.
And that's what kind of struck me when I talked to Paula Hawkes was, you know, she reminds me an awful lot of Stephanie Herseth Sandlin, you know, coming from a farm background and very intelligent, very well-spoken person. So, you know, I mean, that could definitely be a competitive race. But and again, it looks like she's got the early forms of some strategic campaigning that she wants to do that are taking shape. And it's still obviously very early. And of course, Christy Noem's campaign manager, who I was able to speak with yesterday, you know, has his own responses and says that, you know, for example, being on Ways and Means is ultimately just as good for South Dakota and farmers as being on the Ag Committee. And so there'll be a lot of politicking around that, but it is at least something to kind of, you know, focus in on as the race starts to really kind of heat up as we go forward.
Well, we'll log on to the Rapid City Journal tomorrow and see the whole piece there. Paula, or not Paula, Denise, Paula Hawkes and Christy Noem talking about agriculture is probably good for the state, isn't it?
I don't see how it could be bad. Yeah. I think anytime you can actually talk about issues in a campaign, that's good for everybody. And it's probably good for Congresswoman Noem to explain, you know, what committee she is on and why she did leave the Agriculture Committee. And it's pretty shrewd of Paula Hawkes to put that issue front and center. It is obviously, you know, a huge issue in South Dakota. And if you think back to what Christy Noem struggled with when the last farm bill didn't get passed and didn't get passed and didn't get passed when she was on the Ag Committee, you know, that has been an issue that's kind of cut both ways for her. And then I believe her husband and her are in the insurance business, and part of that is selling crop insurance. And so there's been some accusations in some of the blogs about her influence on how that piece of the farm bill has worked. And so, you know, it's going to be a rich, you know, it's got a lot of nuance to it, and there's a lot of subsets to the ag topic that will probably be a good campaign issue for both of those candidates.
Now, the struggles with an effective farm bill are laid out in the Republican platform of 2016, which I read this morning before when I could have been doing other things. But that the Republicans brought that up as what was causing some of those struggles. So interesting. Will they debate, Seth? Will the two of them get together and have a public debate at any point?
Well, you can read my story for a little bit of news on
that
too. But at this point, no, there aren't any debates set up. And a funny story about that is when I was talking to Noem's campaign manager, Justin Brazel, he said, you know, they hadn't really received any formal invites yet. You know, they'd consider those as they get them. But he said it's still pretty early. You know, people won't be watching the race that closely yet. He said this week everybody's focused on the convention, of course, Republican National Convention. And I said, well, everybody except John Thune, who isn't even there. And I kind of laughed, and And there was about 10 seconds of awkward silence on the phone before I realized he wasn't going to laugh with me and change the subject. But that also was kind of representative of the the kind of fracture that is happening right now in the Republican Party. You know, with Kristi Noem, of course, being at the convention, John Thune not being there. They both have re-election races. So, you know, there's some logic that, well, Thune's back here because he's up for re-election. He needs to be campaigning. Well, you know, so is Representative Noem has her own race, but she chose to be there. So, interesting times, to say the least, in the Republican Party.
Interesting time to articulate your decisions and why, and sort of lay that out for voters so that they know what's behind the choices that you make, really. We only have about a minute left, but Seth, I want to make sure we get to, and Denise, make sure we get to Rapid City's mayor and moves toward greater transparency in open government. Tell me a little bit about that real quickly.
We had a story today about it, and Mayor Steve Allender has announced that he's going to take his official correspondence on city letterhead that he writes to all of the council members, which gets scanned and emailed to them, that he's going to make that public. And that amounts apparently to 10 or 12 or 15 pieces of correspondence per year. So it's not quite, you know, a major striking blow for openness in the state that maybe it was portrayed to be originally.
It's underwhelming, perhaps.
Yeah, a little bit for those of us who would like to see it go further. But he calls it a baby step, and I guess that's what it is. I mean, it's obviously better than trying to conceal those pieces of correspondence, but. But it is it's a small step, and of course, those of us in the media who deal with issues like this every day and trying to get government records would like to see it go a lot further.
Mm. Denise, any final words on that?
I would just echo what the David Bordwick of the State Newspaper Association said in that Rapid City Journal article about other states are light years ahead of South Dakota in terms of having correspondence amongst and between government officials as automatically public record. It's not even a question. And in South Dakota, for some reason, it seems like a revolutionary idea. And it's been that way my entire career. We have made progress, but we've got so much further to go in this state.
You've been listening to Denise Ross. She's an editor with Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Denise, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
And Seth Tupper is a reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks for being here as well.
You're welcome.